Hello, and welcome to the Inside Aviews podcast for May the 28th, 2021. This is episode number 60. Our story today, we ride in Lucid Air. We have an exclusive interview with the founders of Aptera, and the Hyundai Ioniq 5 makes its North American debut. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Malogny. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together splendidly splendiferous videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Please subscribe and click that bell icon for notifications. Okay, so welcome, everybody. Let's kick it off by talking about what's been charging in our driveways this week. Let's see. Kyle, actually, you didn't have anything so much in your driveway as you weren't even... So you were not here the last couple of weeks, but you had just done a trip across Montana with zero electric motorcycles. So we didn't get to hear about that. So let's hear about that.
Yeah, well, it's been the month of EV road trips here. So we took zeros across Montana. I just arrived back home yesterday from driving an ID4 across the country. And literally right after this podcast, I'm flying to California to pick up a Mach-E, but a rear-wheel drive long range on aero wheels. So the California Route 1, and taking that across the country again. So forgive the uploads for being a little bit sporadic. We've been editing them. I just haven't had a chance to even review the videos that we're doing. So I always like to have, you know, just watch them through before they go up. Montana was amazing. This is a series I can't wait to share. It's our first real special that we've ever shot. It was absolutely insane. We took 10 motorcycle, in fact, from North Dakota to Idaho, so across the entire state. It was about an 800-900 mile ride on a bike that has a lot less range than that with zero charging infrastructure. So you can only imagine the situations we got ourselves in, knocking on doors, meeting tons of people, you know, explaining electric bikes, explaining the internet to some people, actually. We did meet some people who had never heard of the internet, never heard of the virus. It was amazing. Really a place I truly would love to live. And it's just awesome, beautiful scenery. So we had about halfway through another bike join us. We had a support van carrying the extra bike. But that bike right there on our screen, if you're watching on YouTube, that's the bike Timon rode. For the most part, I rode it a bit too, all the way across the entire state. And truly, it was a challenge, and it was cool. And we went to towns, population 3. You know, we're in the middle of nowhere. We're 40 miles from the nearest human. And, you know, zero charging infrastructure within 600 miles of where we were in any direction. Right. So really quite rural roads. That's neat. Keep an eye out. I have to edit it. And don't even know when I can get around to it. But that's going to be something I can't wait to share.
So how do you get a charge when you need a charge in the middle of nowhere with no charging infrastructure?
Honestly, a lot of RV parks worked very well. So going around meeting people who live in these campers, for example, and sort of like, hey, how much can we pay you to unplug for a little bit? And, you know, so many people were just like, oh, this is so neat. You know, just don't pay us anything. You know, just go ahead and plug in. Some RV parks, charging us almost $100 to charge. You know, we got both ends of it. And so it was a really interesting experience dealing with, you know, sort of like in Tom's world in the Northeast where he lives in Jersey and where I've spent most of my life, EVs are sort of commonplace these days. You know, at least, you know, while not everyone's driving them, everyone understands, okay, you need to use electricity to power this type of car. Here is like, that runs on batteries? How is that possible? really, really a cool trip. And the bikes were flawless, zero issues on them. The zero DSR Black Forests we used. Can't recommend them highly enough. We have four of them here in the garage, and great bikes. Love Zero. Love that they let us do this too. I was hoping to bring some Zero folks along, but the scheduling didn't all come together. So Timon and I went, and we still did the trip anyway. But it was easier with one bike because we had less things we need to charge.
Right. So how was the? I don't know. Was there anything else about Montana that you want to mention?
You'll have to wait for the video. Brian from I1 Tesla joined us in his Model Y for most of the bit. We camped the entire time. except for the last night where we stayed in a hotel that was so sketchy, we ended up sleeping in the van. So we pretty much camped the entire time. It was just a really awesome experience to get away. And then, you know, literally the day after we arrived back from this trip, we had the complete 180 experience where I went to New York for a day because I drove the new Volkswagen Taos, not electric. We won't talk about it. And then I went to Amelia Island, Florida for the Concours d'Elegance. Talk about camping in Montana and then staying for 5 nights at the Ritz-Carlton on the beach. You know, total disparity there. It was awesome. Great trip. The theme at Amelia this year was electric vehicles. So we saw the Hummer EV SUV, the Hummer EV pickup. We saw the Bollinger B1, B2. We saw the Lucid Air. We'll talk about that. We saw Mini Cooper SE. What else was there? Cadillac Lyric was there. Actually liked that a bit more in person than I've led everyone to believe on the podcast here. And yeah, really awesome event. And we got to drive some really cool things, heritage Volkswagens, for example, things like this. Big thanks to Volkswagen. They actually got us an invite to go. And yeah, it was just an awesome experience.
What about that Alfa Romeo conversion thing? Did you see that?
Yeah, and I spoke to the man who created it, and I'm like, okay, so why'd you make this thing? And he's like, well, because I can. And it's and I was like, wow, you make no sense, and I love it. It's perfect. So basically, it's not a one-off. I think they're building 25 roughly of these very expensive Alpha things. They look really cool, but I'm not sure I agree with all of this, the approaches he took, which is, yeah, like trying to make it feel like it's shifting and then the downshift chirps the tires with regen. And I'm like, look, I get we want to remember the best of combustion vehicles. No one loves combustion vehicles more than I do. I'm, you know, a huge motoring enthusiast, but don't try to imitate it. Make it the purest expression of an electric vehicle and make the gear train whine and hear the electric motor and get the purity from a new type of drivetrain, not trying to harken back to combustion vehicles. Not to knock the vehicle, but yeah, thought it was interesting. Really seemed cool. Carbon fiber. You know, you could tell it's very low production stuff. Nothing's, you know, it looks beautiful. I would totally put one in the garage if I had, I don't know how much they are, $500,000, something ridiculous. And yeah, but it didn't work. It broke. So can't drive it. So he couldn't drive it across the field. And I'm like, okay, well, this is like prototype stuff here. The Lyric actually almost broke down on the way across. It was kind of funny. Okay. The Lyric had a stumble where the driver, he was like really pissed too. It was great. They have the side panel that folds down and they have a keypad to activate the car. Because it's total prototype. It has nothing to do with a production Lyric. It's just a design exercise. And he was pulling up and he just like slowly comes to a stop. And I just hear, God damn it, come on. And I'm like, all right, let's see what's going on here. So I got my camera and I started filming the whole thing because I'm like, this is great. We can have a headline.
Yeah, Lyric breaks down. You're supposed to attract attention to yourself when that happens.
Well, he calmed down, but you could tell he was just like, oh, come on. And so finally someone like got underneath the car, pulled the bottom panel down, pulled a couple things, and then it was fine. But it's not production. It doesn't have the Ultium batteries. This is purely just a
show car.
Probably like a little 20 horsepower electric motor. So don't let that lead you on to this not being a reliable car at all. I don't mean it to come off that way. I just thought it was funny that their rolling chassis nearly broke down at least on the way across the field.
But it looks good here.
It looked fine. Yeah. I didn't like the back end. I don't know. I still don't. I don't find it attractive. I don't find it speaking to me. But it didn't like. And I'm not a design guy. I really don't even want to focus on the design. But I didn't hate it as much as I did in the earlier photos. Okay. The after the event, we got to do really cool things. I want to talk about Lucid separately towards the middle a little bit, but we had, you know, because Volkswagen sent us down there, which was so nice. Tymon and I both had ID4s. And so I arrived at the airport and I picked up a first edition in blue, one of the launch cars that, you know, probably Tom had or one of the other journalists was there. So I grabbed that and I was like, feels great back at home. But then Tymon sent me a picture of his and I'm like, whoa, you have cloth seats and there's no sunroof. And the headlights are different. And because he got an ID4 Pro, the base car, the 39995. And I was like, oh, we got to do something here. So excited. The problem was we were drinking too much each night that we couldn't actually go out and drive and do any tests. So we did not do a first edition versus ID4 Pro. But we can do that back here in Colorado because It may have been a drunken decision, but I was talking to Volkswagen. I said, I'm just going to cancel my flight and I'm going to take Timon's ID4 back to Colorado. And they were like, oh yeah, do whatever you want. So I just drove it home.
That's the one that you drove home.
I drove the Pro, and the Pro I really wanted to do a road trip in, because this is one, it's the value play. It's the least expensive one. And the second reason I wanted to take it was it's on aero wheels. So it has 10 more miles of EPA range, 250 versus 260. And, you know, I wanted to see like, okay, well, you spend an extra $3,000 or $4,000 for the higher spec ID4. Is the Pro fine? And the answer is, after my trip, totally fine. It's great. You get lane centering as standard. All the driver assistance stuff you want is as standard. The screen might be slightly smaller. I couldn't tell the difference, honestly. It's unnoticeable, even going back to back. Everything about this car is contented so well. I actually prefer the cloth seats in the base car. You sit a little bit lower. The manual adjustment's nice. Really good there. And without the sunroof, it's actually even quieter, which I didn't know was possible on the other ID, going on ID4s from sunroofs, because those are really quiet. So it was a great road trip, 2,000 miles roughly. I had three charging bugs, and they were all pretty much the same bug. And again, only three times out of my, 14 or 18 charging stops. And it wasn't that I wasn't able to charge. That never happened once. It connected and charged on the first time, every single time, without question, no matter the space I plugged into. What did basically happen was occasionally it would ramp down to like 50 kilowatts. I'd be cruising along at 128, 131 kilowatts. Just fine. And then I'm like, I feel like we're going a little bit slower here. And I'd run out to the charger and look at the kilowatts, and it's like 50 or 30 or 70. Those were the three that it had ramped down to. One was 76 kilowatts, one was 50 something, and one was 35 or something like this. And I'm not sure if it was a temperature issue, because on two of the three times I just unplugged, plugged back in, it went back up to max speed. So that's good. That shows me that it wasn't temperature related. Right. On one of the last charging stops, it went down to, again, that 70-ish kilowatt range. And it may have been actually higher, may have been closer to 90. But even under an unplug and replug, it just stayed there at 90. But to be fair, I was shredding across Kansas and really working it. So that could have been thermals. But really, to the average person, that would have just meant you're charging a little bit longer. The 30 kilowatt one, that's bad. But the 50 and 70, that's livable. For some people. And yeah, just hugely impressed with the long distance ability of that car. I know I'm going on a tangent, but I also want to mention Alyssa's parents got their ID4 last week. I think they picked it up. They don't know how to use their iPhones. They've never owned a modern Volkswagen, and they don't know anything about electric cars. So they had to learn three entirely new systems all at once. And they managed to get their ID4 from Wilmington, North Carolina, up to Providence, Rhode Island on this recent trip. And really without much issue. It was like a 15-minute explanation call at their first Electrify America stop. And a lot of it was like, how do I unlock my phone and download the EA app? I'm like, I gave you a list of things to do before you left on the trip. So we had to get them all set up there. Then they were good. I never heard a call. And I have their car in my app, and I saw charging started. They'd plug in at 5 to 10%. They charge it to 65, 70%, and they'd be off to the next. They got it down.
Hey, so one question, Kyle, about that. Charging speed slowdown. I don't suppose you get a notification or anything on the app or anything about that, because that would be kind of handy if you plug in and you go off the shop or something, and then your car is not charging like it's supposed to be, and you get back and you don't have the charge.
There is a new feature in the Electrify America app that lets you get a notification when certain conditions happen, when your charging cost crosses a threshold, or when your state of charge crosses a threshold. I don't believe the kilowatt speed is part of that that settings, but that would be a good one. For me, it'd be like, all right, let me know when I'm below 100 kilowatts, because I don't want to be here anymore. And then I'll go. Right.
I think that's a good idea for Kyle or me or somebody that understands. But for the average user, if they're getting notifications that saying your speed went down to 30 kilowatts,
they're going to freak out.
It's going to freak people out and confuse them. Don't add that to the app.
I agree with Tom.
Kyle's out there with his camera set up like I am. We people don't know what goes into these recordings of these charging sessions or whatever. We're studying everything, hitting the button every 60 seconds so the screen clears. But the average person, as you saw Kyle's video, he panned around the parking lot. You saw there's a Target there. The average person is going to plug in, walk inside Target, and they're going to shop or maybe use the restroom or something. They don't need to know what's going on with their car. If it's going to 80%, 30%, 20%, they really don't. They just need to know when they walk out 45 minutes later, it's at 85, 90% charge, and they're ready to continue going. These little, you know, bugs where it's going up and down just for – they're never going to be able to figure it out. If they call Electrify America, they're going to be like, what? Like, what are you saying? So, you know what? There's some things, Dom, that it's better that you don't know about.
Right.
That totally agree. Part of them, in my opinion.
Yeah. but I have to say, this was the best non-Tesla road trip from a charging experience that I've ever done before. It really gives me a lot of confidence in not having to own a Tesla anymore. You know, one of the reasons I own a Tesla, Tom owns a Tesla, is because, you know, sometimes I might get a call like, oh, we got to do a shoot in Louisiana. And I'm like, okay, well, we got to bring all of our gear and all of our people. Let's just hop in the Tesla Model 3, load that thing up and shred across the country. Well, now we can do that with ID4, Taycan, Cross Turismo, anything else. And someone asked, would you trade your Model 3 for an ID4? Well, let's see how good the all-wheel drive is.
Kyle, a great example of that is a couple weeks ago, you've been gone a few weeks. A few weeks ago, I drove up to Maine in my, I went to Kennebunkport, Maine in my Model 3.
How was that?
And it was awesome. Really great trip. First vacation since COVID started. It was so nice just to get away. And so the truth, I told my friends, they don't even believe me. We got, Meredith and I left, and I didn't even look to see where the superchargers were. I just hopped in the car knowing that I know this is 450 miles away or whatever. I'll just charge on the way. If I had done that with any other car, I could have made it, of course, like you were saying with the ID4, but I would have whipped out the app. I would have been like, okay, I'm going to stop here. And then, well, if that one doesn't work, I'm going to go here and let me have a backup. But the one thing that Tesla does so well, and we beat Tesla up on a lot of reasons, and rightfully so, this, they're charging, the supercharger network, it's like gasoline. You don't even think about it. It's there. You know, when you just hop in your car and you drive. And that's such
an
incredible advantage. If you don't live with an electric car, you don't know. And that reminds me, early on, you had that picture of the Zero plugged into the RV park. And I wanted to cut in at back then to add, because you had said, well, Tom's in New Jersey and people are familiar with electric vehicles. That reminded me of 2009 with my Mini E. There wasn't a single public charging station anywhere in New York, New Jersey, and I still wanted to get around. So what did I do? I went to parks, you know, the campgrounds of America. If I wanted to drive from my house to my in-laws up in Vermont, you know, 250 miles away with a 100-mile car, I looked at the RV parks along the way, called them up, said, look, can I stay there for a couple of hours and plug in? And I did. So that was a good, like, pointer for the whole community out there. If worse comes to worse and there's no charging stations where you're going, just look for like RV parks they have 50 amp, 30 amp, outlets. You just need to have the right equipment to be able to plug into those, because you don't want to be plugging your level one charger into the campground if you're on a road trip. So if you have adapters or a 240 volt plug, you can use them just fine. But the only thing is, as Kyle said, some of the places you'll charge for free, but some of the places they want you to rent the charging spot for like a minimum 6 hour stop or whatever. And it could be 50, 60 bucks, something like that. But hey, you'll be able to continue going.
Yeah. Right. We've learned on this Montana trip, no matter where you go, you'll be able to charge. It's just, it requires a little bit of looking. You don't need charging infrastructure to charge. And to Tom's point, I wanted to talk about the Mini E too, because at Amelia Island, they had an original Mini E, which if for our viewers who don't know, Tom was part of that pilot program where he was one of, I think, the first production electric vehicle owners in the entire state of New Jersey, if not the first. And you had Mini E number 250, was it?
Yep, I had Mini E number 250. I think there was 239 there. They were all numbered. If people know Mini Coopers, they have those little side scuttle badges, and usually they're just like a design. But with the Mini E program, BMW numbered them, and it was like 1 through 500. So this group of people that were in this pilot program around the world, some of them were in Japan, some of them were in the UK, some of them were in Germany, most of them were here in the US, we all just like knew each other by our numbers. We had this Facebook group. It's like, oh, you're number 217. Yeah. Oh, you're 250. I saw a picture of your car. And if we, on the rare opportunity where we saw someone else driving one on the road, well, in California, they bumped into each other a lot because a lot of them were in California. But if here we bump, if I saw someone driving down the road, all I tried to do was get a picture of their scuttle number or at least read it. And then I'd go online and I'd be like, who's number 385? I saw you on the New York Thruway. It was a cool time.
Yeah. So I can't remember. Did the one series Active E come before or after the Mini E? It was after, wasn't it?
After. Yeah. The Mini E was 2009 to 2012. Then it, for those that wanted to continue in BMW's pilot program, 2012 to 2014, when the i3 came out, you had the one series that was, they called it the Active E.
There was a neighbor of mine in Connecticut who had a Mini E in the program and then got the one series Active E. I remember seeing them around town, and every time I was so intrigued and never had a chance to go for a ride in a Mini E. But the one that Mini brought, 237, I think, something like this, still works. So
Tom, I'm going to get something. One second. I'm going to show you something really cool.
Yeah, so basically what I want to do with Mini is do a new Mini Cooper SE versus old one. I think the old one actually has more range, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, really?
So yeah. Take a look at this. So in this, you know, in the center of the Mini Coopers, the speedometer was like off to the center console. And you see down there, it says number 250 and Mini E. So about 2 years. Now, they took all the cars back. You can only lease them for a couple of years. So they took all the cars back, decommissioned most of them. They kept a few out there. As you can see, Kyle had one. Like 3 years later, I got an email from someone in from Germany, Peter Kranz. He's a BMW executive. And he said, Tom, you know, I'm digging through some of our old boxes here. We're clearing out some things. And I found, because my car was kind of known. I was out there blogging. I was writing for Inside EVs, BMW blog. And I had a blog called Mini E250 .blogspot. And, you know, so I was out there. I was in the news a lot. And when they decommissioned my car, evidently, they took the parts out of it over in BMW, and they did things with them. And one of the things they did, because it was actually, there's videos of me in the BMW museum, the welt and everything, driving the car. They made a clock out of my speedometer. And unbeknownst to me, and Peter Kranz emailed me and said, Tom, if you'd like, I'll send this to you. We made this, you know, when we decommissioned your car and took it apart. That's the actual speedometer that came out of my car. And there's my the blog. And so it's so cool that they actually sent me this. And then he sent me a box of other like Mini E stuff that like nobody else got, that was like BMW, old manuals and technical information on the car. And I have it here. But I thought that was so cool that I actually have the speedometer that was in my Mini E that I drove. Yeah, that was like the end when I took the side scuttle off. See those two?
The 50s? Old Clipper Creek Mini SE, Mini Charger.
You see that plug? This was so long ago. The J1772 wasn't even invented yet. That we had a proprietary connector made by ODU that we used to charge our cars. And before I turned the car in, I took my side scuttles off because they were decommissioning the cars. I have them around here somewhere. But those are the things that were on the side, how we would identify the cars.
Cool.
It's such a cool story. Really neat car. I really want to do something with the one Mini has in their collection.
Did you talk to them at all? I'd be amazed. Yeah. Did they say they'd let you drive it?
No.
Yeah. But, because like, no. What I understand,
all their classic stuff.
Yeah, and, that is like off limits. But maybe they've softened their. Because I asked them. In the
look,
past.
There's off limits, and then there's Tom Malogny off limits, which is a little bit farther past.
I've asked, and is as involved as I was in the program, as much as I did with BMW, the answer has been no. At least, you know, I haven't asked in a while, but I wanted to like do one and have my with my i3 and compare the two and do like a video of the two cars together. Yeah. It's like, that's me. Right when I got the car, geez, my house. I just got the house. That's like 2010 right there. And, cool.
Such a cool scene. So awesome.
Yeah, it was a great, and I mean, that's what got me hooked, on electrification. Back then my daily driver was a Porsche Boxster, and, I got that little Mini E, and after like a month, I was like, eh, I sold the Boxster. I didn't even want to drive it anymore. Wow. And I mean, that's how, you know, I just immediately got hooked on electric and been driving electric ever since.
Right on.
Yeah, special car. So I think, really from my side, I want to do something with that car. We need to convince Mini to let us do something with it. Even if we just ride in it, I think it would be cool. Anyway, Amelia was such a great show. We had an amazing time, amazing cars. The whole theme was electric. So they had like all the 1800s electric cars to the future concept cars of tomorrow. And amazing time. We filmed so many videos. I can't wait to show everyone. We filmed probably 10 or 12 videos over a span of 2 or 3 days. And it's been really fun.
Right. Hey, so that was really great about the, just one really quick question about the ID4 Pro again. That's the base model. So did you find did the extra 10 miles really make a difference in your tripping at all?
Hard to say. Not sure, because I hadn't really driven. The thing about road tripping across the middle of the country is you sustain high speeds the entire time. It is worst case scenario for electric car, because speed limits are 80 plus. You're doing 80 plus, and you're just charger hopping. And I will say that it definitely seems to have at least on par or slightly better high speed range than my Model 3. Again, my Model 3 is degraded. It has 100,000 miles on it. It's a performance, and I have a roof bars on it. So I don't say I'm saying it has more range. We can do that test scientifically.
Sure.
Just saying from the road trip gut feeling is I had more than enough range to make it anywhere. I was really able to just unplug as soon as the charging curve tapered, do about 100 miles to the next charging station, plug back in from zero all the way up to 50% or so, and then rip again. Charging times were averaging 20 to 25 minutes. Not bad. And the only thing that really sucked was stopping at all the Walmarts. That got old real quick. I'm kind of tired of touring every Walmart in the country.
I hear you.
Kyle, are you going to do a 70 mile an hour range test with that version?
If I have time, I really would love to.
I did it with the launch edition. I'd love to be able to compare that.
Yeah, same here. We have good conditions. I just have to go do all the Mustang stuff while I have that car, because that I have for a shorter period of time. And I think this ID4 is going to the Detroit fleet. So worst case, I can grab it there and do a 70 mile per hour test. I would like to do it out of home base here, though, just because I know the roads and I know how to get the most out of it on flat roads. So that'd be cool. Yeah, well, I'll do it at some point.
Okay. Hey, so not only has Kyle spent time in the very adequate VW ID4 this week, he also, as you know, we've mentioned earlier, ridden in the decidedly more upscale and capable Lucid Air. So it was on display at the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance, and somehow Kyle managed to talk his way into the passenger seat for an experience very few have had the opportunity to have. So if you want to check out his reactions as it's happening, go ahead and type Lucid in the search field on the Inside EV's homepage, and it should be like the second news item from the top. I believe we have another post up there with a video showing off the Lucid user experience, which is how owners will interact with their cars via the glass cockpit across the dash and then the pilot panel and the center divider. So Kyle, you've seen the Lucid Air in person before and have crawled all through it. How was it actually to go for a ride?
Really neat. So yes, it wasn't like an exclusive ride, even though it says that in the title. I think Mark maybe misunderstood. I think we were one of the first. I think we may have been the first on video, but they let some select media go into the car. I think in total 5 or 6 drives happened. And I know a few other people that went. We also brought Jeff Perez, who is our Motor One editor. He joined us as well. So overall, the experience was
super. Jeff is in the back seat.
Jeff's in the backseat. He's the reason that everyone was complaining about the door open thing on the screen. He just didn't shut the door hard enough. Now, the Lucid Air is supposed to have soft closed doors, and they work on all three others. This back door was just needed a little bit of a shove, but it's an early car. I mean, I don't care about that stuff. That's easy. Right. What I care about was how does the drivetrain feel? What's the NVH like? How close are we to production? And when are we really going to start seeing these things on the road? So gut feeling was very quiet, very comfortable. You know, these types of drives, and I have to be totally transparent, are really an opportunity for the automaker to share what they want to share about the car. You know, it's a 15-minute ride. I'm in the passenger seat. I'm not driving. I can't make up really any true impressions of what the vehicle is. We treat these as first tastes, as first glances, and they're generally pretty positive because we don't have the chance to spend time with a production car in our own testing to see where the downfalls are. So this yes,
you're being driven by Derek Jenkins, the VP of design. So he is, you know, right at the top of the company. So you had access to, you know, gold, really. You could ask him anything.
Yeah, and I've known Derek for, let's think, maybe over a year now. And so it was really cool. And, you know, the whole Lucid team, I've been able to meet consistently. So it was like, nice to see you guys. Let's go ride in this thing. It was really cool. We had to start it in an underground parking garage, so no one saw us getting in and out of it, which was really neat. Altogether, it felt good. The biggest impression here, though, is... the sense of quality throughout the entire thing. The material usage is better than the cars we experienced in New York. So it's one step closer to production than when Tom and I were playing around with these in New York. The ride quality was very smooth. And it's not sporty. It's not a sporty car, but it accelerates like nothing I've ever experienced. And
right.
Part of me says acceleration's a one-trick pony. You know, I used to own a Model S P100D. I have a Model 3 Performance. I don't drive them hard. I very rarely floor it. It's either I'm on track and I'm wide open all the time and I'm just pissed off that it's overheating, or I'm cruising around at 3 miles an hour with my dogs in the backseat and I don't want them to fly out the back window. So acceleration is really cool as a party trick, but it cannot be the entirely defining experience of a vehicle. Right. And so... the acceleration was the most aggressive thing I've ever felt from a car like this.
But what kind? Not 0 to 60, right? It was more about when you get up to speed and then give it a squirt, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we're pretty much at the point where we're at limit of grip on any car off the line at this point. Taycan Turbo S, Model S Performance, they're just using all the available grip anyway. And this will do pretty much the same. And maybe there's minutia if I got out of one and got in the one next to it. It doesn't matter. It's melt your face off the line. But... it's not even that the other cars die off at speed, because that gets thrown around a lot. They do still accelerate very quickly at speed. This increased in acceleration as the speed increased. So from 40 to big number was a increase of acceleration throughout the entire band there. And that was staggering. That was something I've never felt. Yeah, it was like even Timon in the backseat, who's honestly a way harsher judge of cars than I am. You know, he's like, this car's stupid. Why do we need another CUV? Whatever it is. And he was like, his face was just like, whoa, because he's been in all the fast EVs too.
Right.
Impressive, impressive. And then, you know, the range, of course, is going to be good. And we'll test all that. And this is just driving around 29 miles an hour talking to Derek. I just thought it'd be cool to bring everyone along for an experience. We got that video shot, edited, uploaded within 20 minutes after the drive. And it's done really well for us. I think it's the best performing video launch we've done on our Inside EVs channel. I think we're at 90,000 or above views. Yeah, it's been really good. You know, everyone's complaining that there was not more. Look, I feel the same way. I want there to be more. I want to test the car. I want to drive it. I can't wait to get it on track, do road trips, take it across the country, do all the things that I want to do when I test a car. But that also, you know, that will come with time. This was just a very nice sprinkling of taste.
They weren't trying to like game the system. You saw all of the displays. It was less than half full. They weren't like tanking it to the very top to make the range figure look impressive. I mean, you can't, you know, whatever the rate, whatever.
Yeah, it's not really like that. A lot of people are like, the Lucid's trying to make it look as best as possible and hold everything off. And like, it says RC prototype on the side and people are like, oh, it's radio controlled. I'm like, no, it's release candidate. And so, you know, everyone's trying to pick holes, but at the end of the day, the Lucid team is sort of starting to become friends and they're just nice people and they just want to showcase what they've been working really hard on. And they admit openly, there's still some things that need work. You know, Derek was talking about daily iterations at low speed. For example, you get some motor cogging right now, a little bit of choppiness. And I remember watching a video of Peter Rawlinson driving in a low speed environment. And he was saying, oh, we need to smooth that out. Well, you absolutely do. And this is a topic that he said they're working on this week. I have no question that they will be able to work it out. It's just the fine tuning at this point. The last 3% needs to be completed. Going into it, recognizing that it's, you know, the bulk of it's really good. So when we get the car in a production version, we will judge, you know, that last 3%, of course, very heavily.
Bill asks about the glass roof.
Is it hot?
Didn't even notice anything. No.
I love the way the windshield transitions into the roof like that, though. It's just so nice. It's like,
see, it looks like awkward to me.
Yeah,
I think the sunshades are, they should have gone with a Model X interpretation. While I don't love the Model X sunshades, I do like how they're out of the way and then you get the full glass roof. I'm surprised that they have those just sitting there blocking your view. It's a cool integration of that, but I think the Model X folding into the A pillar was better.
Sure. And so then you know, bring them up when you actually need them, basically.
Yeah, and then you only block your view when you need them. I mean, they were terrible in the Model X because they were this big,
right?
But Lucid could have like a trifold instead of a bifold. I don't know. That to me was a little awkward, especially sitting in this view from the back seat. Seats were very comfortable. You know, there's very little that we can judge, you know, truthfully in a short drive like this. Nothing came out of shock. Nothing came as a surprise. I think the biggest surprise was everything we've been imagining about Lucid and talking about is truly there.
Right. Some Jose Santon asked if it was an alpha Lucid or a beta. I believe that would be a beta, right?
Honestly, not sure. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the inner workings, but I'm fairly certain this is their beta program, just because we're so close to production.
Right. All right. And offhand, do you know when is deliveries, first deliveries? Are they talking about that?
Yeah, I kept pushing him on that. I don't have an exact date, but I do know Peter Hawk Holdinger. He's a friend who runs production at Lucid. So huge confidence in their production capabilities. I think I've mentioned it a year ago on this podcast, but Peter used to run the highest quality factory for automotive out of Germany, which was the Audi Q5, Q7 line. And he managed that whole facility. He then went over to Tesla and fixed their Model 3 ramp up issues and got them working. And now he basically got a green slate to do, or I should say a flat slate to do. You know, Peter Rawlinson said to Peter Hockholdinger, build your ultimate factory. Here's your dream, build it, make it efficient. And they have, and scalable, and it's really neat. So I have nothing but confidence in their production ability.
All right. Hey, okay, so let's move on to the next thing. Kyle and I had the pleasure a couple days ago to spend some time with Steve Fambro and Chris Anthony. Those are the founders of Aptera. We recorded a little segment that will give you some historic background on the company, its latest prototypes, its ambitions for production, and how they plan to get there. So let's roll that tape now, and we'll talk a bit about Aptera after the end of this interview. So for our viewers out there who are unfamiliar with the Aptera story, can you give us an elevator ride history lesson and maybe tell us why, briefly, you've returned to this concept?
Sure. It was actually Steve's vision a long time ago for a super efficient three-wheeler that could get him in the carpool lane here in Southern California. He had a frustrating commute to work and just didn't understand why vehicles could only get, you know, at the most 40 miles per gallon. You know, where was the energy going? So I think him being an electrical engineer and really focused on the math and science, you know, really got into the equation of what makes for an efficient vehicle. You know, first he learned that you lose 60% of your fuel just pushing air out of the way in a typical sedan on the freeway. So take that aerodynamic drag down to zero, then rolling resistance, weight, and then an efficient powertrain. It's a shame that in internal combustion engines, you only get 27% of the energy out of your fuel. With electrons, it's a much better transfer of energy from the power source to your wheels. So you put all those together and you have what's behind us here, which is the Aptera, super aerodynamic, lightweight, three wheels. And he came to me when I was building my boat company. I was working on composite processes to make things lighter and stronger. And he really liked what I was doing in composites. I really liked what he was doing with the ethos of efficiency. And we held hands and started Aptera. We raised a good bit of money back in 2005, 2006. Started to build up a great team of engineers here in Southern California. Built a dozen or more development vehicles and went through validation with FMVSS and crash testing and durability and all that fun stuff. And unfortunately, the economy turned on us in 2009 and the company was unable to raise funds and we missed out on a DOE loan. The company had brought in new management. Steve and I had left the company and unfortunately things didn't work out by 2011 and they liquidated. And then Steve and I were fortunate enough to be able to reacquire the company and reform it about 2 years ago. So the last 2 years have been spent with a lot of people from the past rebuilding Aptera and building a great new team to innovate where we left off about a decade ago.
And right. COVID really forced us from the beginning to build a global team. So we have engineers here, of course, in the headquarters, but we have engineers all over the world, vendors all over the world. We Zoom with them, or teams all hours of the day. And it's just the new reality. And it's actually been helpful for us because it let us stretch our reach and take advantage of different resources, more, you know, attuned to what we're doing, more in our time frame, or maybe more than our budget, et cetera, et cetera. Or even willing to sort of take intellectual leaps with us, whereas more traditional suppliers would not.
Right. So the vehicle itself looks, you know, very much like that original vehicle, or the last iterations of it. And I guess that's no accident, because I believe you're working with the same designer, Jason Hill. Is that true?
Yeah, well, the shape is dictated by science. So
okay.
You know, planes look like other planes,
sure,
because they're super aerodynamic, right? So same thing with us. You know, this vehicle that we're building here is dramatically different from what we were building a decade ago. Aerodynamically, it's much more efficient. The whole chassis has been, you know, completely redesigned from the ground up. So it's you know, in every respect, a different vehicle. But if you take, you know, 100-yard steps back, right, and you look at them, you know, side by side, they're both super aerodynamic three-wheel platforms. So, you know,
right,
you wouldn't be blamed for saying, oh, they look pretty similar.
Yeah, the evolution of technology, especially with simulation tools, has helped us make it both bigger and with lower drag. So there's no net increase. It's actually an improvement in drag, but we have more headroom, more space inside. So it's just better. The body goes together better. There's fewer parts. They connect in a way that requires less tooling and fixtures. So it's just fundamentally better in every way.
Right. So you have really ambitious plans for this. I believe you want to have production by the end of the year. So how confident are you that you're going to reach that goal? And which version are you going to begin shipping first? I believe you had like a 1,000-mile version and all the way down to like a 250-mile version for like $25,900.
Probably the 40 kilowatt hour.
Yeah, the 40 kilowatt hour slated first, and then the 25 kilowatt hour, then the 60 and the 100. There's certainly some challenges with the larger packs that may require some significant chassis changes. So we'll get to those, you know, as we grow. But we're focused right now on the 40 kilowatt hour version. And that's what we're building into our future beta development vehicles.
It's the most popular vehicle that we've sold. We're averaging about 2,000 vehicles a month, wow, reservations.
Wow.
And of all of those, the 40 kilowatt hour is the most popular.
Yeah.
So let's see, February, March. So you're up to maybe
just crossed 10,000 orders just a couple of days ago.
Okay. That's pretty significant, I think. I don't know, for like a startup company that, with a radically different sort of approach to vehicles.
10,000 Elvis fans can't be wrong.
Right. So where are you now? Where are you now in the process? I believe you just built your last alpha prototype. The Soul.
We're building three alpha prototypes. You see, okay, behind us, the black one and the white one over here.
Okay.
That's called Noir and Soul. We'll be unveiling a video on Soul here in the next couple weeks, which is a result of, you know, finishing that vehicle and getting it out, putting some cameras on it. Soul is a lot more refined. Obviously, Noir, we built, the first one always comes together in an interesting fashion. And it looked good and, gave us a lot of good data. But Soul, you know, is another leap forward because we were able to do so much, you know, on the electrical engineering side and working with, you know, vendors to get in new and, more refined parts for it. So we're building a third one called Luna. Luna's silver.
Nice.
And that'll be the last of the alpha builds. So we'll be moving into the beta builds after that. And I would say we're progressing nicely on our beta designs, and hopefully we'll be releasing, actually we've already released some tools. So I'm already releasing tooling parts for beta, and then those betas will come together through the summer.
Yeah, beta is much closer to production intent. So the alphas are, they're primarily press vehicles. They are highly representative, and they're fully designed. They're not hand fabricated. The parts are tooled, but in the time that we've since designed beta, we've learned and made all these improvements, or alpha, we made all these improvements for beta. The vehicle's going to be even bigger, even lower drag. It's going to have more cargo space. It's just so much better. So those are the vehicles that we'll be doing development testing, accelerated life cycle testing, crash testing. One of them, I think, is going to Slovenia so they can test with the LAFE for the traction control algorithms and anti-skid and all that stuff. So betas are really important in our design cycle.
So LAFE is your in-wheel motor supplier. That's another thing about this vehicle, is in-wheel motors. I believe the original one has had all three wheels powered.
Correct. Noir is a three-wheel drive.
Okay.
Soul is two-wheel drive, and so will Luna will also be two-wheel drive.
Okay. And the production version, will that be a three-wheel drive or two-wheel drive, or just the optional?
It's options. Yeah. Okay. The standard package is front wheel drive, two wheel drive, and you can option up to get the third wheel, the rear wheel drive. It's about 50 kilowatts per wheel. So you get another 50 kilowatts on the rear if you add it.
Right.
But, as far as I know, we're the only vehicle you can buy that will go 0 to 60 in less than 5 seconds for under 30 grand.
Right. I understand it'll go, I saw something where maybe it went as fast, quick as 3 seconds, 0 to 60. On your website, you say 3.5 seconds, I believe.
Under four. Yeah. Yesterday, we were even out test driving Soul, and I was driving Chase because we had a VIP in the vehicle. And I drive a Bolt, which is a fairly quick little car, but I couldn't match their acceleration. They were pulling away from me. And I was putting down all 150 kilowatts in the Bolt. And so it was great. It was actually inspiring to see the person, do that in the two-wheel drive car. It drives really well.
So, Chris, how do you feel like when you're driving the car, how does it feel compared to like the last original ones you drove back in the day? Is it much more refined feeling or?
Yeah, it's different. We were remarking on that the other day. In a lot of ways, it's much more refined. But in some ways, we still have a good ways to go in our development cycle. The vehicle a decade ago, we had a production intent vehicle ready. And we were ready to put that in manufacture if we could have found the funding. So today, we have to go through that whole cycle again. And the alphas, they're pretty raw. There's squeaks and rattles and, things that aren't, the way they should be. But in terms of driving feel, I mean, it feels very well grounded. And I think what we had kind of expected by moving the mass of the motor out to the wheels is what we feel in the vehicle. It feels more grounded than I think the previous vehicles felt. And I think it's,
Our VIP yesterday, I was really surprised when we swapped drivers and let them drive. We normally don't do that, but it was on a public road. So we were at a chase car. But he drove it like he stole it. And this guy owns a Porsche.
He owns every type of Porsche and McLaren.
So his daily driver is like some all-wheel drive Porsche 911 turbo, whatever. And he said he felt just no lack of confidence in our vehicle, going around the curves very aggressively. It's not his Porsche, of course, but he wasn't scared in any way, or he didn't think that it handled weirdly or uniquely in any way. To him, it felt like a solidly planted vehicle. And it was just it was unlisted commentary. And I thought it was pretty powerful coming from a car guy like that.
Right. A lot of people talk about
it. We live it every day. So it's good to have unique feedback.
For sure. So a lot of people talk about like unsprung mass when you're talking about in-wheel motors, but that's not really, you're not really finding that's like an issue.
No. When you think about unsprung mass, we know that for years, manufacturers try and bring the weight in to increase the response time of the wheel system, right? You got the dampening, the spring, everything else. But, we're replacing the spindle, the rotor, the caliper, all that is replaced with the wheel motor. So you're also losing a lot of weight too. So the net is not much more. And because the vehicle is so wide, it does have an effect that we see both in the software modeling and in real life of just really keeping the vehicle planted. So any other effect of jounce or response time is not perceptible to us from the unsprung weight.
Well, Kyle, tires on a pretty thick firewall with a thick sidewall, so that that helps in some of the handling characteristics.
Right. So Kyle has a lot of performance vehicle experience. So I don't know if you have some questions, Kyle.
Not so much on the performance side. I'm mostly super excited about the long range capabilities of this car. Before we get into maybe what you can do with an Aptera, can you explain sort of the path to production from here? Obviously, alpha cars sound like you're finishing up there. Beta cars are going to go for validation and testing. And then what's it take to get that into a production facility, into mass production, and into eventually the reservation holder's hands?
Well, our secret weapon in this fight is Monroe and Associates. So it's no secret that we've been working with them for some time. They've already laid out our factory for us. Their team has been here working with us on site and working with us remotely. So that everything we do in terms of planning for production, you know, started months ago with Monroe and Associates. And they've helped us craft a very competent plan of everything from site selection of the assembly location to tooling that's needed, capital costs, and everything else. So they are not just an integral, but an essential part of our plan. And we're just executing that plan.
Wow. That's awesome. And in terms of timing, do you think that you can get through the beta program quick enough to get reservation holders their cars at the original time? Or when do you think we're going to start to see, you know, sort of a rough timeline as to when, you know, we'll see a regular plated Aptera going down the road?
You know, our goal is to have a production intent vehicle by the end of the year. Obviously, that doesn't mean we're going to start shipping 100 vehicles a week in 2022. But if we have a production intent vehicle by the end of the year, then we can very critically analyze with Monroe and Associates how quickly we can ramp that production and then start to inform our customers on, hey, your order number 2,553, we expect to deliver that vehicle in August, you know, get ready, you know, plan your parking spot so you can get lots of solar power out of your Aptera during the day type thing. But yeah, we've been working with a lot of great engineers from around the world, and you know, they're all working towards the goal of having that production intent vehicle by the end of the year.
Yeah, that's awesome. So can't wait to see him on the road. I think the craziest thing that you just said, though, that our audience may not be aware of, is parking it out in the sun. Can you explain why that's such a useful feature of your design?
Well, you may remember the first Aptera, we had a very small air conditioner, specifically because when we studied air conditioning, we realized that the systems are designed for peak, what they call pull down. So you get into a really hot car, and then the system has to pull down the temperature quickly. So Chris and I asked this sort of dumb question, like, why is the car hot? Why should the systems ever let the car get hot when it's parked? Why wouldn't you ventilate the cabin and keep it at least not hotter than ambient? So that way you need a smaller air conditioning for pull down. So that got us thinking about the solar cells on the original Aptera roof to operate the fans and systems to do that. Well, fast forward, you know, 10 plus years, the cells are now 25% efficient. They're flexible. And we have so much surface area on that can get insulation. When we did the initial calculations, we said, from the hood, I think we said, well, on the roof with the new cells, we calculated it was something like 8 miles or something per day. And then we said, well, why don't you put them on the nose? Well, why would you put them on the dash? Why would you put them on the back? And you just did some rough calculations. And then we built a real solar model and ran it for, 6 months or so on your rooftop. And we were getting, you know, 4 kilowatt hours per day in peak insulation. So for Aptera burning 100 watt hours per mile, I mean, that's 40 miles per day. Now, not everybody is going to get that amount of sun. Now, we live in San Diego and it's sunny all the time. But in areas of low latitudes, you know, you could have 20, 30, 40 miles per day free from the sun. So for most people, that's less than their commute. Now, you don't have to worry about plugging in at home. You don't have to fight, you know, for spots to plug in. So apartment dwellers, people live in townhomes, or maybe they only have a one-car garage, all those reasons. It felt that we had a unique opportunity to provide most people's driving energy from the solar technology. That's been a big part of our intellectual property push, too.
It is so just amazingly cool. And you mentioned your efficiency at 100 watt-hour per mile. Just for reference to our audience, I'm driving a Volkswagen ID.4 right now. I'm just outside of Nashville. So far today, up from Florida, I'm averaging about 350 watt-hour per mile. So a significant decrease in electrical consumption with your design. And with your design, and eventually with future iterations with larger battery packs, we're talking about some serious, serious range. So what is the long distance sort of cross country or really long road trip going to look like in an Aptera? Will it charge up enough from the solar cells? Doesn't sound like it, because you can only get about 4.5 kilowatt hour per day. What's the long distance going to look like? And that's going to be, I think, kind of fun.
What, two charges across the country, maybe 2.5?
Yeah, you know, to think that we could drive up to San Francisco on one charge, or that you could make it across the country from San Diego to Walt Disney World in Orlando with just one charge stop, you know, it's pretty amazing thought. Obviously, if you're road tripping from Florida up through Tennessee, you can't sit in a vehicle for more than 3 or 4 hours without having an get out, stretch your legs, use the restroom. So, you know, I think those kind of opportunity charges for us are significant, and you can actually use charging infrastructure that doesn't have to be fast charging for you to have a really pleasant trip because, you know, our power needs are so much less than other people's.
Even with the smaller model, let's say the 250 kilowatt hour pack, you could drive, you know, 200 miles or so to go camping on an extended 5-day trip. And then by the time you're done, have your tank almost completely full to head back the opposite direction, not even need to charge. So I think it's going to depend on what the person wants to do. But clearly, with any of the vehicles, you're going to charge at a much, much faster rate in terms of miles per hour of charge in any of the public charging stations with any of the vehicles. So I think it is going to make cross-country trips much, much less of a hassle than any other EV out there. Any other vehicle, awesome. You don't have to stop. You only have to stop to empty your bladder. You can wear those astronaut diapers if you want.
There was a picture of an Aptera with a tent on the side of it that Dominic sent. So you mentioned camping. Can you? How did this picture happen? What's the idea here?
We talked about it last almost a year and a half ago. I said, Chris, well, if I could go so far, why would I worry about bringing a tent? Why? Because you've got this great structure inside, you've got climate control. Like, why couldn't we make the car the tent, the vehicle the tent? And we both kind of thought, well, no, it wouldn't make sense. We sketched it up and we shared it with our designer and iterated it. And somehow magically it just manifests into a real tent and became an option. And I think that the truth is it's going to be a really big popular item, because it's not something that's like some hokey afterthought. It's actually been part of the development plan for the past year, because I love camping. I camp with both my children. I want to be able to take them. I want to also minimize the gear that I bring and the impact that I have, and to be able to use the vehicle as a tent. You know, you're off the ground, you're more protected. I think it's just a great idea for anybody that enjoys the outdoors.
So the back is pretty large. You can get 2 full-grown people in the back there, no problem?
Yeah.
If you push the seat forward, tilt it up, you have about 7 feet from the back of the seat to the tip of the tail storage. So, you know, it's plenty comfortable for 2 people and a dog maybe. You know, it is actually pretty voluminous in the back. I think we're all surprised when we actually got the tent fully built out and could put it up. You know, that you could lay in the back and you could see through the rear hatch glass up to the stars. And, you know, it really was a lot of good, nice, useful room.
Nice. Really looking forward to this coming together. So I wish we had more time with you. There's so many things I wanted to talk about, like, you know, how the structure works in a crash. And then you have a cooling inside the skin of the vehicle. Somehow it's you know, really kind of fascinating to me. And yeah, I believe is it the composite made with hemp at all? We heard that was a thing.
Part of the structural stuff, but you know, we use carbon fiber and e-glass and possibly Kevlar. But it's just a great sandwich board composite material that ends up with a really strong safety cell structure around the passengers. In our previous FMVSS test, we had the highest roof crush strength of any passenger car on the road. You know, you could put two elephants on top of the Aptera or two Humvees on top of the Aptera, and it's just fine. So it's incredible what you can do when you design to the material. Right. You know, I think a lot of people and automotive companies have explored composites, but they've tried to make it a replacement for steel. And you really can't build a composite part like a steel part. They just aren't analogous. So if you're going to build with composites, you have to rethink your platform. You have to design the platform.
It has to be all in. It can't be a fad or it can't be a half measure. Otherwise, you don't really get the benefit. And so in our case, we're not burdened by 100-year relationships with steel stamping suppliers and everything else, which steel is a great material. It's like a space age material almost. If you were to compare to go back to the Iron Age or anything else, steel is just fantastic. But for building vehicle structures, we think composites can be better.
Right. Wow. It's pretty exciting. I'm really glad to see you guys back in the saddle and making this thing happen again. I was a big fan back in the day.
Remember.
All right. Okay. But I never got the opportunity to speak with you back then, unfortunately. But yeah, it was great. I'm glad you could share this time with us today. And we're really looking forward to seeing how things develop. And I don't know, maybe we can have you back again in some point, you know, when you have another big development coming. And yeah, we're looking forward to this. Quite a bit.
Kyle, thank you.
Kylie, have anything else to say?
Oh, I'm so excited for this machine. I think it's right up my alley. You know, huge focus on efficiency means one of two things. You can either extract a lot of performance out of it or a lot of range and daily use, two things I'm really interested in. And yeah, just can't wait to get behind the wheel and start having some fun.
All right. Well, so Aptera is being relatively transparent with its development, and I understand that you have a webinar coming up this month for fans and order holders. So where can people catch that?
We'll look for information on our social media, and we'll broadcast everything that we're doing. There is a lot of exciting announcements to come. We're starting our new fundraising campaign, so we can give people an opportunity to invest early in what we're doing. And we're about to kind of fully go through with everyone how the beta vehicle is shaping up. So talk about the changes that we've made, aerodynamic improvements, the you know, packaging improvements, and obviously some of the partners that we're working with to make it all happen.
Right on. Sounds awesome. Nice to meet you all, and we'll see you again hopefully soon. All right. Thanks for joining.
Yeah,
thanks for the opportunity.
So yesterday, Aptera announced actually that it's just hired a chief financial officer. And that's a significant move for a number of reasons. First, her name is Jani Sun Burlingame. She has like over 20 years experience in the financial world and has founded and been running her own consultancy business, SS&B Global Consulting Corporation, since like 2007. So this part of her bio is interesting in the context of Aptera, though. It says Jani's has steered over a dozen initial public offerings, IPOs, for domestic and international Fortune 500 companies across a variety of industries. So if you hear that and think, maybe Aptera has plans to go public, this other quote from Steve Fambro, underlines that. He says, "To accelerate our speed to market, we sought out an exceptional candidate with a breadth of both international and domestic IPO experience." And so it's also worth noting that at the very bottom of the press release announcing this appointment, that she is also an independent director for a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC. So SPAC is another way of, you know, going public, and SPAC IPOs were white hot in the EV space like last year, but enthusiasm has cooled quite significantly. So I'm not sure if this is the best move or what, you know, we'll have to see, I guess.
I wouldn't say enthusiasm's cooled. I think it's just starting to heat up. I think it's going to be the new way to go is reverse mergers, all these companies, and then we'll just let it play out in the markets.
If you look at Samsung, I mean, it worked okay for Lucid. It put about $4.6 billion in the bank account for them.
Well, it's not working so hot right now.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, we don't talk about sort of stock stuff too much on this podcast. But right. Yeah.
If you look at like QuantumScape, was one of the big ones, right? The solid state battery company that's working with Volkswagen. Their stock was like $130, $131 or something at its peak. And now it's like, I forget what it is actually because I don't have stock, but I think it's like $27.
Well, anyway, a lot of comments on there. Sorry to cut you off because I wanted to get to it before we go. A lot of comments as to like, who's this vehicle for? And I've been thinking about this. Do you really want to spend 1,000 miles on this thing?
Well, no.
Okay. Well, there's your answer. What's the point? So, I mean, it's, they're going to be miles, making so. that 40 kilowatt hour pack seems to be the sweet spot. Right. I think they should make a one-off range version, limited production, make it have an aura. This is the longest, this, that, the other, you know, say only 100 are available. That'd be really cool. And charge an astronomical amount of money, rip the air conditioning out, do all what you need to do. It's going to be cool. I can't wait to do some stuff with it. It's going to all come down to how it drives. Is it going to handle well? Is it going to drive well? Or is it just going to feel like a little toy with three wheels? But, you know, it's not cheap. So we'll see.
Right. I mean, it's relatively cheap. It's $25,000.
Yeah, but I meant like as a toy. It's not like ATV money. It's not like $6,000 or $7,000, which is like, oh, this thing drives like crap. Well, good thing it's just a Honda ATV. I'll bomb it around the backyard. It's got to be good. It's got to be good enough for road use.
Good point.
Yeah, Tom, interesting that they're going to they said they'd have to re-engineer it for the larger battery packs. You know, we all said that when they talked about 100 kilowatt hour pack, and we all sort of scratched our heads and said, well, there's the footprint of the car, and at the current technology, that's a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack. Like, one of them doesn't go into the other, so they don't need to make that car. And if it's a lot of re-engineering and money spent, just as Carl says, stick to 40. And you're off the way. So,
Martin, you're absolutely right. As we know, it doesn't take very much to excite the people in the EV community. So all you need to do is say, we're going to make this car go 1,000,000,000 miles in a charge. You get all the money you want. No one knows how this stuff works anyway. And then you get good public appeal. And then, you know, that's a front page headline. Then it's page 11 when it's like, oh, by the way, we can't actually do that. So it's, you know, not a big deal.
I think the never charge aspect of it was even more appealing than the 1,000 miles.
Yeah.
The
fact that,
you know, you could, you know, you might not ever have to plug this in if you don't drive too far. You know, it's, what was it, about 40 miles or so a day that it'll it's recharge.
More than enough.
So for a lot of people, many days, I mean, you can go, especially the fact when you consider it's, if it does say have a 400 mile range, you know, even one day you might drive 100 miles, the next day 10, and, you know, it'll all average out if you got that thing parked out there. Yep. And if you live in an area that gets a lot of sunshine, Southern California or whatever, I mean, you know, you could go a really long time without charging it, even with a 400-mile battery pack. So,
right. So what'd you all do when that video was playing? I went to Starbucks.
did you ride your smart car down the sidewalk, actually?
I did drive down the sidewalk. Well, I kind of do that leaving my house. I just drive down this little sidewalk. It's kind of a fun thing whenever I drive it. It fits just perfectly on the paved section.
Right on. Okay, so let's move on to the next thing. It's So we've talked a fair amount about the Hyundai Ioniq 5 quite a bit in the past, but this week it made its North American debut. This means that if you're as impressed with the car as we are, you can now put in a reservation. There are, though, a couple of things you should be aware of. Of course, the big thing is the price. We still don't know what the exact price is in the U.S., so that's a bummer. We do know, however, that it will come with only one battery option. That's the 77.4 kilowatt hours. That's slightly bigger than the large battery option available in other regions, 72.6 kilowatt hours. So we will get a choice of rear wheel drive or all wheel drive. The rear wheel drive version is said to be targeting 300 miles of range. It comes in three different trim levels and six exterior colors. The configurator is now up on the Hyundai site. So until pricing is public, its functionality seems to be a little bit limited. It wasn't quite as much fun as I expected it to be, but I mean, you can still kind of see the colors that you can choose and things like that. There's another small wrinkle. Deliveries are said to begin this fall, but not in every state. It will only be available in the ZEV states, California, Connecticut, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Oregon, Rhode Island, Vermont, and a few other ones that are like very populous, like Texas, Florida, Illinois, Georgia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Arizona. So it will be available in all 50 states at some point next year. So it's not like too terrible. It will be interesting to see if they'll have enough production to even supply the initial demand in the states where it will be available. So I don't know, Tom, are you considering this car at all, or are you waiting to drive it to see what the final price is? As part of this introduction, they announced it will come with 2 years of unlimited charging at Electrify America. So does that make it more appealing to you?
So the charging doesn't make it more appealing to me at all. Okay. I could see why it makes it appealing to a lot of people, but I'm going to charge where it's more convenient. Charging is so inexpensive as it is. I'm not going to go out of my way and drive 20 miles to go to an Electrify America charging station. I think it's a nice perk, and I think it's really good for people that are trying to make this fit into their budget. And it's a way to say offset. Maybe if this costs $50 more a month to rent, to lease than another car, they can factor in the fueling, and now all of a sudden the car is right where they need it to be financially. Yeah, I am considering it. I really like this car. I don't know if I need another car next year. I'm still deciding what I'm going to do with my truck. Am I going to get F-150? Am I going to get a Cybertruck? Maybe I won't even end up getting a truck. I've always had a truck, and maybe I'll get something like this. The thing about it is right now, there's so many good options coming to market for the first time in like 10 years. I really can't decide what I'm going to be getting next. But yes, the short answer is yes, I would absolutely consider getting one of these. I think it's going to be a really, really good vehicle.
Right on. Yeah, the Inside EVs forum community is pretty excited about this. And there's some good threads on there. If you're putting a reservation in, you can go and chime in on a reservation thread. Because that'd be great to see that. Tony S. is saying he's absolutely considering this car versus the ID4. So that's an interesting matchup. You know, it depends on what the price of this is going to be. But that rear-wheel drive version, I'd go for that. Oh, man.
So I got to see it in person, and it's really cool in the prototype at the Las Vegas Charger a few weeks back. It's way bigger than the photos will lead you to believe. Right. And there's a ton of walk-around videos around out there now. So Hyundai invited a select few group of people. We were not one of them. And, so Hyundai, come on, where's our invites? We want to share this stuff with the cars, with our audience.
They'll call us next time.
I was in touch. No, it's totally fine. But awesome videos, walk-arounds out there going around this car, not even just from our market, but there are some Korean automotive journalists that have been doing a really good job covering this vehicle from early in its inception. This, to me, is something to keep an eye on. Surprisingly huge number of public requests for us to try this car out, more so than almost anything, including Lucid. Yeah, I guess I don't know where the appeal comes. I think it's all down to the styling. It looks awesome. I just want to lower it and put it on some old cool wheels and put some Lancia Delta Integrale Rally, heritage stickers on it would be really cool. It is pretty amazing, actually. We should do that comparison, the Lancia versus the Ioniq 5, because they kind of look the same. It's awesome. Right.
I like it. It's like a low roof crossover. Does that give you the impression that it's like that low in person, or is this
no? The impression was it's just as tall as a Mach-E.
Okay.
And it is just as tall as a Mach-E.
Right on. So, anything about that you wanted to mention, Tom?
Talk about what? How about tall it is?
No, but the
about the Ioniq. I mean, I said I love it, and I absolutely am considering it. It's. And to Kyle's point, maybe that's what you were prodding me at. It went over my head. It looks like it's like a Golf, like type of a car. It looks like it's a small car just by the lines, but it's not. It's not e-tron size,
like but a modern CUV.
It's definitely like a crossover, a small SUV. But if you just look at the picture, it comes across as it's like a hatchback,
Right.
That's cool. I like it. I just don't know if the interior is going to live up to the exterior. That's my concern. Hyundai interiors are good, but they haven't been that creative on the inside. I actually just had a new Genesis this week. I only played around with it for a day because I was doing the ID4 stuff. That was mega good. So really excited to see what they can do with this Ioniq. I hope they make it funky on the inside.
Kyle, you know what a Hyundai interior I loved was the Nexo. Have you ever driven that?
Oh, they're so cool. So I next time I go to California, so cool. Yeah. Said they'll hook me up with it.
The interior was like, I remember we did the Kona Nexo test media drive, and they made us drive both of them. So I was just like, I really don't. Can I just drive a Kona all day? Like, nah, you got to – this one you go one way, the other one you drive back. But as I was driving it, I was like, this is like – gorgeous in here. This is one of the nicest interiors. Like, yeah, I mean, I wasn't really thrilled about the hydrogen. I had to stop at a station and refill it. And like, the truck was delivering the hydrogen at the time, so we had to wait. And it was just like,
but that's kind of cool. I've never driven a hydrogen vehicle. I want to, but the Nexo is special because it's an entirely ground up chassis and design just for that hydrogen car. And it's really nice, actually. It's very cool. I don't know about the hydrogen aspect.
The interior is so comfortable. I was like, why couldn't this be the interior of the Kona? You know, I know it's a different price point, but you know, they nailed it on the interior of the Nexo. It was so nice.
I'm going to do a video on one here pretty soon. Can't wait.
I'm hoping the quality of the materials inside the Ioniq 5 are going to be as good as that, because I don't mind the layout of the Ioniq 5 inside, like the pictures we've seen of the interior, but I'm a little worried there's going to be a little hard plastics for the price tag, you know?
What you touch is soft and nice, that's all that matters. And that's only like 3 or 4 points. So I hope they do that. And they do that pretty well. I was just in the base Elantra, which is the entry level Hyundai. Okay. And that was nice. It was fine. But it wasn't exciting. Doesn't match the exterior of this car.
All right. Hey, Martin, really quick. I believe Motor One Spain shot the video of the Cooper Born, which has just finally debuted. So that's a spicy version of the VW ID3. It looks absolutely terrific, and I sort of wish Volkswagen would consider selling that here in the North America as its ID3. But
we need an ID3R to come here badly, and keep bugging Volkswagen about it.
Right, and this would be that, you know. So
that looks so good.
So so it was shot for Motor One Spain, but Martin, I believe you've added your mellifluous English voice over there. So quickly, what do you consider are the main selling points of this car, and where will it be available for sale exactly? Is this like a Spain-only vehicle? It's a spin-off from Seat, right? Cooper was
Cooper is the performance bit of Seat, which is the Spanish bit of VW Group, for sale in Europe. I don't know about US. They didn't rule it out, but they didn't rule it in. Four versions of it. So the two battery sizes, 58 or 77 kilowatt hours from the ID3. But you can also spec eBoost on both of those. Right. So I guess four versions, really, depending on what you want to configure. 0-60 in around 6 seconds on the faster version, on the big battery one. Of course, it's based on the ID3, ID4 platform, so 125 kilowatt charging. But in real world, we've seen Kyle get a smidge more than that. If you arrive at a low state of charge, about 30, 35 minutes to get to 80%. Nice specs with this. They've gone for all the best bits about the ID3 interior. And so they've gone for the big screen, the big 12-inch display on this, and the head-up display with the augmented reality, dynamic chassis control. And you can even turn off, Kyle will like this, you can even turn off all of the stability gubbins if you spec the wider rear tires. Rear wheel drive, obviously. So on the configurator, you can choose some wider rear tires. And if you do that, they will then enable you to turn off all traction control and just hoon it and drift it and have some fun. So they've thought about this, and the interior is nice. If you get the blue color on the outside, the seats are like a blue microfiber suede, and so is the dash and the door inserts and everything. I'd go with the blue because everywhere is the copper detailing, and it just works, in my eyes, subjective, I know, really well with the blue. But yeah, just beautiful, super gorgeous, really nice. Don't know if it'll come to the US. It is a European car, but the Cupra, the Seat designers have had their say on the ID3, which I think looks friendly and happy and like a guppy, and this looks angry like its evil twin to come and rip up some kind of GTIs, combustion cars. And it's they've done a great job. They haven't just, it's not badge engineering. They've done a great job using a platform. So the screens, everything else. I mean, I don't like the capacitive buttons in these things. I like to be able to, if I'm driving, feel my way with my thumbs. That's like a real tiny bugbear of mine, but that's on all the VW ID cars. So that's here to stay. Otherwise, really gorgeous.
So beautiful.
Hey, Martin, have you ever thought about going into voiceover or podcasting? Because you have a great voice for this.
That's what Motor One Spain said to me. They're like, well, we made a video, but can you say some words about it? Okay.
So it's really great. So it is true.
So look, it's very nice. Very, very nice car. And price-wise, so the reason why. So this was debuted at the Motor Show, the same as the ID3, as the Seat El Born. Then it became the Cupra Born because they realized it's a much better car than the ID3, and Seat is the Spanish budget brand of VW. So it was going to have to be cheaper than the ID3, and that wasn't going to work because it looks better and it's going to be a better car. So then they moved it to the Cupra brand, added a bunch of performance-y bits, let them run away with it. Then they can charge a premium for it. And then they, rather than calling it the El Born, they called it the Born, which is how we ended up with that name.
Right. Well, the Elborn's still cooler, but
I just think Elborn's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a great name. But you know, all good. That's a hot car. So when I'm over in Europe in a couple of months, I got to go drive that thing because that's going to be amazing.
Yes, right. We will find you one to drive and to play with, and it'll be wonderful to have a look at that. Yeah. From a US perspective as well, because I'm just convinced they won't sell the ID3 where you are because it's too small. No one wants to buy it. Hasn't got enough range. But I disagree so strongly with that. But a VW of North America, no better than I do.
But when it looks like this,
I don't know about that.
When it looks like this, I think it will get some sales. And with a higher price, I think there'll be some profit margin in there for them as well.
Well, absolutely. And okay, so the tech specs, not cutting edge for EVs in 2022, but battery pack size and charging speed, etc. But who cares? Look, Kyle has driven across the country several times now in this platform, and it's fine.
Right.
Yeah. See, you don't drive cars on paper with numbers. You drive them on pavement. So, sorry, the dogs are trying to attack a dog walking across the street right now.
Oh, brilliant.
They're just asserting their dominance. Go away. The dog walks on, and they've done a good job. what this means is, I'm going to cut off here because of the dogs.
That's okay.
All that matters now is not the numbers. It's not the acceleration time. It's not the 0-60. It's not the charging speed. It's does the car make you happy when you drive it? And this looks like with all of the nannies turned off and you get some opposite lock on, it's going to make you really happy. That's the measure of a car.
Right. Okay, let's move on real quick. We're almost out of time. So Ford had an interesting presentation this week called Ford Plus Capital Markets Day. It was aimed at investors, but there was a bit of news in there for us as well. Notably, Ford is increasing its electric vehicle investment to $30 billion by 2025, and they now say they expect to have its vehicle sales to be 40% EV by 2030. And some of those will be electric Ford Explorers and Lincoln Aviators. The Explorer is the best-selling SUV in the U.S., so that would be a pretty significant vehicle. Timing-wise, though, it may only be 2025, so not a whole lot to talk about for a while. Kyle, did you happen to catch that presentation or read about it at all? And if so, what stood out to you is the Explorer? Is this really big news?
No, we'll wait to see until it happens. What's bigger news is all the F-150 stuff. I think Jordan was on last week. I still didn't have a chance to catch that podcast to talk about it. Ford's really going in on the mainstream vehicles. They're not chasing numbers. They're not chasing headlines. They're chasing functionality and usability. That's what we're going to be testing when we can with these cars. Does an electric Explorer and Aviator make sense? Well, the same chassis. Sure. Well, the Aviator has a plug-in hybrid here in the U.S. I think I've seen about two in the public ever. Yeah. And that's a cool car. 400 horsepower plug-in hybrid. Looks great. I don't know. I think we are going to run into some problems very quickly with charging infrastructure. Alyssa's parents on the way up to the Northeast said they had a full bank of EA chargers, which is the first time I've heard about that. I think everyone's jumping the gun to make their best-selling models electric, and that's not the move right now. We need to get so many things sorted out, public knowledge there before we start saying like, hey, why doesn't everyone buy an F-150 electric? I know I'm in the minority on this, but that's my personal opinion.
Right. I mean, it depends who buys it. You know, if the people with garages, with driveways where they can charge at home, you know, if those are the people buying the car.
That's at a minimum, but it's still not going to stop the number of people road tripping. I mean, I go across Kansas. Sure. No one in Kansas has Kansas license plates because the only reason you're there is to get across it. No offense to anyone who lives in Kansas. But all of those people, if they all drove electric cars, would still need to charge every 150 miles on a stretch where you're doing 90 miles an hour with a big headwind. Right. And that's a challenge. And I know it's going to be a slow transition, but man, I think, you know, the good news is it keeps us in business for longer. I'll keep doing road trips. We'll see if this turns into a problem. The cars are getting better and better. No question that the cars are getting great and they're fun and they're interesting. And, you know, maybe we'll just let the infrastructure problem happen and see how it gets solved by then. Tom seems to think that there'll be money thrown at it and it'll be fixed. I totally disagree. And that'll be great. It'll be a fun argument for the next 10 years.
When I get off the call, this podcast, I'm going to have a look at the video that Marquez posted earlier. Marquez Brownlee, MKBHD.
Yeah, that's a good video. 'Cause
he got some hands-on with the F-150 and claims that the range figures were with payload.
Right. I talked with Kyle about that little the other day. So I was on a call
with
I was on a call with Lacey, who Misco Electric, who is our host.
Oh, I got to see her in Florida. She was great.
Yeah, she is, right? So we were on a call with her and Nikki Gordon Bloomfield, and they mentioned that, and it seemed to me like they said that they didn't do the EPA test with 1,000 pounds in the back, but there wasn't a big difference with 1,000 pounds in the back as opposed to the EPA. You know, it didn't really make a big difference hitting their range marks with 1,000
pounds. Yeah, well, that's true. And Dominic, you and I did talk about this. Weight doesn't matter when it comes to EV range, I have learned, with towing and things. It's all aero. When you put a trailer on the back with an F-150, an aerodynamic 10,000-pound trailer is going to give you more range than a super flat 2,000-pound trailer. Prediction. This isn't scientific testing. We will do testing. Dominic and I had a chat. We're going to try and reach out to some trailer companies if anyone knows of any, and we're going to do different types of trailer testing for F-150 battery electric or whichever electric pickup truck comes first. We will then select a standard trailer with a standard setup, which we will do all of our range testing with.
Right. And I think we're thinking about like an 18-foot long tandem
needs
axle
to hold a car.
Right. And the wide one. All right. Okay. So really speaking about trucks, I just want to hit a couple things real quick. So the Rivian R1T electric truck deliveries have been pushed back to July, which is just a month later. So it's not a big deal, but you know, it's probably some people disappointed, but they did show off their camper and kitchen. I think it comes with their fold out camping option, the kitchen option. If you get that, it comes with a 30-piece set of utensils and cooking gear, and it looks really great. Wow. I think you might have to go to the Rivian site to see a picture of that. Also, speaking of electric pickup trucks, the Tesla Cybertruck had a bunch of things revealed about it last night that was really great. It's got its own camper. This was from some patent application drawings that was just publicized yesterday. And it has its own like fold out of the back kitchen going on and a camper top like option. So that's pretty exciting. There was a lot of things about towing as well with that. Like I think it looked like there may be like an automatic backup towing thing like Ford has with its F-150s that you know, it hands off, kind of lines itself up with the hitch. So yeah.
Wait, these Cybertruck applications, they're patent applications. So what does this do for that cyber camper situation? You know that thing
Cyberlander.
Cyberlander. Editor in chief got so pumped up about this whole thing. Yeah. Does this mean that they can no longer produce their stuff?
Oh no, I think they still can do their stuff. And this is like a patent application. We don't know, it's not officially a Tesla product. So we don't know if Tesla is actually going to make a fold-out stove and different things. Well, you know,
we don't even know if the truck's going to look like that yet. So
yeah, well, we do.
The fact that they came out with this camper was quite interesting because we don't have final designs. But that's
right. Okay. Well, the Cyberlander is a little bit different. You can stand up in that. It looked like the Tesla one and the Tesla patent application had like a lower roof and was more tent-like. You know, this is
so it's like a porta potty sized with a bed.
This is like a tiny house.
Okay.
Tiny.
Speaking of, coming soon to a YouTube channel or a few near you is a vehicle that is not electric. However, it is powered with solar panels and lithium ion battery storage. Picking that up this week. I won't say what it is, but I have to go to Iowa to get it in a couple days.
Ooh, that sounds interesting.
Yes.
All right. So we should go, but one last real quick thing. Oh, man, there's some other things we want to talk about too. But anyway, if you're on Team Aria, that's the electric crossover coming from Nissan, of course. You'll be pleased to learn that it's made its public driving debut on the streets of Monaco, and that it appears to be pretty popular in Europe. Despite some fierce competition from VW and some others, they say they have over 200,000 hand raisers. Now, those are kind of low stakes, and the number of conversions to sales is likely to be a lot lower, but it's still somewhat encouraging. So click Aria in the Inside EV search field, and that'll pop right up for you so you can see that thing driving around. And that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments on any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, or Raiden, if you're listening on another platform, don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Malogny is at Tomalog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at Out of Spec, and I'm at Dominic_Y. Please subscribe and click that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.